So we'll open the meeting for the Boulder Planning Commission. Today's October 10th, 2019, and about 7:04. I want to recognize that our mayor, Steve Cox, is in the meeting, and Peter Benson, and also Cookie Schaus. We'll go ahead and start with our old business, which is to approve September minutes. Does anybody have any comments on the September minutes? Okay, should I make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve September minutes.
I'll second your motion.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes, you do. Yes, Mary votes officially today because there's an absence. So, yeah.
Who's gone?
Is Perry is absent?
Oh, that's right.
I didn't know he was still on the commission.
He's not yet.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But we have his name to do in there.
Okay. Okay, good. He's been gone so long. I mean, not really, but gosh. So we'll go into new business, and we'll have initial public comments.
This one you wanted that letter from, DJ Red. He was going to read it, I thought. He's not here.
So can we...
Should
just
we read it for him?
Into the minutes and then just move on? Does it have to be read?
We can enter it into the minutes, or you can read it if you like, or we can ask questions and discuss it. I said Tim Bridges was going to come and read it, but I got a couple of emails from BJ, on a couple of questions, and so he may have decided after that long drawn out labor explanation that, I don't know what he's decided, but he sounded a lot more, he understood things better, a lot more conciliatory. So I don't know exactly, but...
I haven't heard from him. The last I communicated with him was that I would read his letter, have a letter
Let's
read.
Do it then, if that's what he told me.
Yeah, and his letter says at the top that, thank you for receiving this letter on record.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can someone do that just as the fill-in for BJ, or can someone read it?
I don't have a copy of it.
I do. I'm happy to read it. September 2019, Dear Boulder Planning Commission, thank you for receiving this letter into the record of the October meeting and for your ongoing efforts to bring a fair and consistent book of ordinance to bear. I'm writing in reference to the use of yurts and other alternative building materials as dwellings. After conversations with various town and county officials, I have three questions. One. Per the Boulder Town Resolution 2006-02, dated August 3, 2006, it reads to me that exceptions, clarifications were made to the IBC to allow for yurts as permissible dwellings, provided construction addressed basic provisions for safety and septic. A recent example of this resolution in action is the home of my neighbor, Autumn Peterson, who has changed in the interim that I am not able to procure a permit. Two, my application for new yurt construction was signed by the requisite town officials and sent to the county for approval many months ago. I've inquired with the county about what is holding up the application, to which they have not responded. When I went to the Garfield office in person, the clerk mentioned that someone, unnamed, from Boulder Town had called their office and requested the permit application not be approved. Absent a new resolution negating or overriding the one dated 2006, it is unlawful to disallow a new permit application. Furthermore, it is unlawful for town officials to interrupt the official work of the county. Three, the concern cited to me by town and county officials is that yurts do not meet IBC requirements for insulation efficiency. Ostensibly, this is to protect fair usage of public utilities. If efficiency is the concern, why wouldn't the town draft a new resolution requiring that any yurt be heated by solar or other renewable or off-grid resource? Many thanks for your attention and efforts. Sincerely, B.J. Miller.
Thank you.
Did you all get a copy of the response? And if so, do you have any questions about it?
I have questions.
Are we in the administrative report segment now?
Should we finish with public comment or?
Well,
yeah, so that's
just read it, we might as well.
Yeah, I would like to have a discussion about this, where it's appropriate.
Right now we're in the initial public comments, right? So I just want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. So do we need to stop and talk about it, or are we commenting as?
It's still there, dear.
Okay.
Going
to the zoning administrator report.
So we're going to go ahead and close the initial public comments, and then let's go into the zoning administrator report, and you can.
Okay. Let me go ahead then and explain basically his 3 points that I responded to, and then you can ask any questions or whatever you want to say about it. His first point is the town resolution of August 23rd, 2006, and it's 2 parts. What about the resolution, number one, what about what? As to the first part, I think you've all seen a copy of the resolution. If you haven't, basically what it does at the bottom of the letter is section 104 of the International Building Code. And what the resolution did that was drafted by the then town attorney in 2006 is pretty much copied verbatim out of the International Building Code. And really all it says in there and all it says in the 2000 resolution is alternative materials, designs, and methods can be allowed so long as they meet all of the, they meet all of the, or the equivalent of the prescribed in the code for quality, strength, effectiveness, fire resistance, durability, and safety. And then add to that, since then, the new state of Utah energy code that they make part of. So, and those are the things that are required in the code anyway. This is all the state code, the plumbing code, and everything. It names all of those things. So basically, it really didn't change what the building inspector can do in terms of inspecting a home. It didn't change anything. And the yurt just, you know, it's the opinion of the building inspector and others that it doesn't meet all these criteria. So.
Yet he's coded them right.
You what?
Aren't there yurts in town that Jerry Wolseley has been a part of coding?
There's one yurt that he was a part of. And I really don't want to get into that too deeply because it was 5 years ago. He was relatively new on the job. And I think there's a miscommunication there. And I just don't want to create any issues for a 5-year-old year. And I don't, you know, so, you know.
I just don't understand.
Well, basically, she had an inspection for the cabin, for the pad, for the electrical meter, et cetera, et cetera. Then she thought that she had a certificate of occupancy for the yurt itself. I've seen the certificate of occupancy and it doesn't say that, it doesn't list that. Being that May, Jared's position, you know, he's learned a lot of the job now, and I don't know what he thought then. And I'm not going to talk to him about it, because if we do,
right,
you know,
right,
we're going to go to red tags. And so I just assume I personally leave that alone until but now his position is no, he cannot inspect it. He's red tagged Rachel. He met with Steve and I out there. He went extensively through the code and why he cannot inspect it, why they do not meet code. And Rachel's a little different because she didn't get any kind of a building permit for any of the improvements to the kitchen or the bathroom. And so, you know, after researching it pretty carefully, looking at the town resolution, which is not an ordinance, by the way, it's a resolution, and it doesn't really carry the weight of an ordinance. And so, unless and until, well, let me back up. You could build a yurt that would pass inspection. But a prefab off-the-shelf yurt basically is a beefed up, thickened tent. And so, you know, as to inspection, habitability, and loads, and energy efficiency, et cetera, everything I've read, it can't pass.
I want to just disagree a little bit on that because I've done some research too. And when you go into Colorado yurts, Pacific yurts are two of the biggest yurt companies. They are IBC. They can upscale their structural, their fire retardant. They can handle everything, and they actually say right on the website that they can handle their up to IBC code. And not only that, but in my own mind, it's an important discussion. I know it comes up every few years. And it's, you know what I mean? But the thing that's important, I think, for the Planning Commission and the Town Council to understand is that right now, not only are a lot of people living that way, but it's, you know, it's one of the most, at least to me, and this may be personal, but it's also having talked to other people, an aesthetic way of affordable housing. They're sound structures that they wouldn't be big yurt companies across the country if they weren't. And people are living in them. They're designed for desert, high step, high wind, snow type living. They can handle that stuff. If you've seen the rafters and the insulation in them, they're insulated if they're done properly. So they can be put up to code. And I think it's a mistake at this point, thinking of the general vision of the town, to assign them as tents. They are not tents.
No,
something different.
That's an analogy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just want to keep that clear, though. Yeah. Because in my view, being on the Planning Commission, I actually think it's something the town should try and help make legal and possible for people to do. And that's,
if it can pass code, it's already legal.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it can pass code. And so there seems to be some...
What you're saying is some can pass code. There's some.
Correct. They have to be done to a certain standard.
No. Jared's on board with that. If the owner of the year can prove that it passes these codes, and the way to do that, if somebody wants to buy a year, is to take that one to him and say, here's all of these ratings, here's the structure, here's the way it all works. And, you know, does it pass code? He's the expert on code.
But why is B.J. Miller being... saying
what?
He can't get a permit. Isn't that what this letter is about, that he got denied a permit? Right, so why is that? That's what I don't understand.
Because he can't prove that it meets all these specs. It's a fairly inexpensive off-the-shelf here.
So you'd have to get it stamped by an engineer or something like that.
Exactly. And you
has
have
that
to
been suggested
meet,
to
you know, me? I'm aware that there are yurts out there that can, or you can build one that can. There's nothing in the code that says you can't have a yurt-shaped house. There's nothing in the code that says you can't have a yurt. All it says, and we've adopted the IBC, the state of Utah's adopted it, and all it says is it has to meet all these codes.
Yeah.
Curtis, has anyone said that to BJ?
Yeah.
In the letter, in the response, it says it at length.
Okay.
And BJ wrote back and said, I get what you're saying. So, the other point about it is, too, is this is really a question more for the town council. I mean, the legislative role of the Planning Commission is to recommend new legislation or amendments to the bill, or you have the authority to grant or deny or modify a conditional use permit. That's where your administrative authority comes in. But as far as code enforcement goes, the mayor's the chief enforcement officer, and he calls the shots on that. So that's why I'm always reluctant to start the discussion here, unless there was some way for unless you wanted to entertain a discussion amending the ordinances, but then you've got state law to confront, and you've got the entire IBC to confront, and I'm not really sure how you would do that.
Right.
So, but if a year can pass code, and somebody wants to spend the money to get one like that, and take the stamp drawings and everything to Jared, and so on and so forth, and show how that's done, then, and build it to their specs, I'm not sure how the platform would work, you might have to insulate the underside of the platform, do extra steps.
Yeah.
But I believe it can be done.
Yeah.
This particular section, when it was passed back in probably 25 years ago, it wasn't addressing yurts. They didn't have the popularity then. It was addressing earthship houses made out of tires, recycled tires, straw bale houses, because some jurisdictions were denying straw bale. They said, no. The walls are this thick. It can be insulated. It can meet all this. Fire retardant. We can do all those things. And so they kind of proved it. And so they passed this to address that. But as it stands right now, as the zoning administrator, I'm confronted with a town application, and it says right on there, I hereby certify that this application meets all of the town ordinances.
Can I have one more question just to clear things up? There are people, and I don't know the veracity of it, but talk about that if they're able to sign a waiver to waive liability of the town and take responsibility for something that's not up to code, that's a possibility. Why do people say that? I mean, people have done it.
Well, people say a lot of things. I don't know why they say that. But a town can't.
The building inspector did that, basically. Jimmy. Let that open. Jimmy let that open. It's like, oh, if you sign something.
Yeah.
So that's not a possibility anymore? At least that would be a wonderful
way. It's up to Jared, I think, is really what it comes down to, as far as.
Well, not only that, in the law, that waiver of liability, how does that travel to the next owner? How does that travel? How does that bind the grandparents of children injured or burned up in a fire or something like that? It doesn't work. The town cannot accept that for its own personal responsibility. At least not in that case.
You don't think something like that won't hold up?
I don't think it would hold up in court at all. I really don't. I mean, what you're doing is you're waiving it for people that are not party to the agreement. It might work as to the person that signed it, the applicant, but what about all the other people that have, could be impacted, and subsequent buyers, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a tough one 15 years ago, and we spent all that time for everybody who was around. It made the Deseret News, and it was this, and it was that, and meetings, and frankly, what happened then is the council just said, okay, give us some way to move on here, and then Jimmy, give us something good, okay, you're okay, but Jared is a new inspector, he's much more code, well-trained and versed in the code. And Steve and I met with him to get the rules of the road and spent an hour out there with him on Rachel's site because we wanted to know what was going on and we wanted to get the lowdown. And that's what he told us, and that's bears out my research. So
and he's
I really
the end.
Have a good answer.
He's our building inspector. He's the end guy that has the
right,
he was the first guy. Or
basically, we contact with the county
exactly
for building inspection services.
Right. Yeah.
So we have a two-step process.
Right.
Local consent, if you will, the application that's forwarded to the county.
To the county.
Actual building permit, do all of the inspections.
Yeah. Yep, he's done that for you've done that for a lot of years.
Yeah. The town could decide to go with, find some other building inspector to contract with, and that would change some of the picture, but it depends,
Yeah.
Like in the past, the town had a Randy did building inspections.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It sounds like the county has been a lot more aggressive at red tagging places. Seeking out places to red tag, where used to be things going under the wire.
Yeah. No, there was a pretty lax atmosphere and whatever, and as things evolve and progress, then people try to, you know, enforce it, and Jared is no exception, so he's not going around too aggressively red tagging, but he has red tagged a little bit. And so, you know, Steve, you know, I take my marching orders from Steve, and Steve wants to, you know, do better, and he wants to whatever, but on the other hand, none of us have been calling Jared and said, hey, get over red tag this or that or the other. So if he red tags it, he's kind of doing it on his own volition. If I see, which I did just the other day, a fairly serious violation, I just emailed the individual and said, hey, real quickly, get me an application over here and get this out. And get it done, and, you know, don't let yourself be hanging out here. And they're doing that. So I view my part of this as a problem solver, not creating problems for anybody.
And as long as we're going to work with the counties on inspections, we're not going to hang Jared up to dry by saying, yeah, well, we're going to let yurts slide by, because then we're liable. And we're liable for anything that happens. If that burns up, guess who they're going to come after?
Yeah.
It will be the town, because we've allowed something to be put that is against our ordinances.
But again, so I think the word's out there that they're illegal, but if they're properly done, they're not.
They're not.
Well, word out there that they're not illegal.
Yeah.
If they meet code. We try very hard to spread the word. They're not illegal if they're up to code.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
But most people buy an old yurt from someplace.
Right.
They want to come in and set it up, and it will not pass inspections. So that's where we're at.
It's not about the year. All the years is a shape of a building and some different kind of style. It's about the code.
So are canvas yurts up to code, or would it have to be solid, insulated?
Some of the yurts that, like Matt said, the Colorado Yurt Company and Pacific Yurt Company, they are canvas shells on the outside, but all the different layers of it are to code.
Yeah, they've
so just, it's,
code.
It just, there's different variations of a canvas yurt.
Yeah.
Okay. it's the amount of insulation, it's the amount of fire resistance to the material, like sheetrock has a fire rating. Sheetrock used in a commercial application is different than in a residential. Mm-hmm. Different fire rating because of a different code, the international residential versus the international commercial. So, it's a very, very complex situation. The code book is that thick.
Yeah.
And Jared's well trained in it. The other reason we don't just, you know, grab somebody and say, hey, you can be the building inspector, we'll pay you this much, is because we have a duty of competence there. And we have a very competent building inspector now, and we have a building department that's all set up. Sherry does all of the intakes, all the paperwork, and they do this for all the towns in the county.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of, you know, whatever. Jimmy was much more lax, but, that was years and years ago, and started it probably 30 years ago, and Jared probably took over, I don't know when, 5 to 8 years ago, something like that. So things are moving along.
I predict what would happen if someone bought one of those yurts that's all up to code. It's going to be as expensive as building a house, and they're going to go, well, maybe we don't want to put a yurt. Doesn't mean they can't, but you financially, it's going to be more than just buying one, you know, a cheapie to put up. We'll probably have.
The bottom line is that the town, you know, if we sign something, we're giving a blessing on your thing. It has to be up to some standards. If you go under the wire and you do everything and nobody catches you, and you go to sell it, then nobody can get a mortgage on it. That's basically the thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of permutations to it. You could never get a loan. You could, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, but there's plenty of reasons, the affordable housing arguments, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what this municipal stuff's all about, balancing interests and solving tough problems.
And then Curtis, You had something else in your administrator report that you were going to talk about, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so you're on again.
Okay. Let me turn this thing off.
Okay.
Question.
Peter, you have something?
Question.
Hit the orange button.
What's going to happen with the people who, say, in the last 5 years have put up yurts that are not... Like, what are you going to... What's going to happen?
A lot of them are legal. I mean, he hasn't red-timed any other ones, so it's hard to say.
My advice is...
There's no power.
I don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
It's like...
Power to be nice.
It's a village, yeah.
Oh, the only ones that have been red-tagged are ones that need to...
There's one legal yurt in town.
Yeah,
that yurt was the Ryan's that was put up prior to September of 1998. Predates the ordinances and before we adopted the codes. And so that one is good to go. These others...
It's not really up to us, it's up to Jared. Jared's going to
be
taking the
call. We're really worried about the town's liability there, too, but what are you going to do?
Right.
The green button?
Yeah.
Okay. This looks kind of long and windy, but it is so highly germane to your revamping of the table of uses that I'm going to try to run through it pretty quickly. I've got paper copies here. If anybody wants to take one home.
Use Zoom. It's not that large a thing.
Okay.
Maybe it's larger. It might be easier for people to read.
I can see it.
There you go. Can you just send me that file when you get it?
Okay, good. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thanks for printing.
Oh, okay, that's page two. That's for you, when you get into your specific. If you're going to cover the ag zone discussion tonight, I wrote out some, just a bunch of like, you'll play into the So, this is kind of some, going back, a little bit of quick cleanup. When we did the resolution for the conditional use permit for like the Sugarloaf Farms, it's approved, so there's some stuff in there. There's some stuff in the permit that Josie said, well, let's make chapter six, and I said, can we do that? I said, yes, you can do that. And so it was kind of like, so then when I get the minutes, I go ahead and put it all into resolution form, and that's not exactly the way it should be done. So the flow on something like this, when you pass a resolution recommending something to town council, and even more probably importantly, when you, because you're the final authority on conditional use permits, what I think we should be doing is putting it into the form of a resolution here, and we should be writing it out. So when you're ready to approve something and attach conditions or whatever, that's the point at which we should take out pen and pencil, or however you want to do it. And then whoever wants to make the resolution, let's craft it right here and give it to Peg so it makes it into the minutes. It's on the recording correctly. And I'm not kind of after the fact actually crafting the resolution for you. Because that resolution has to then go in the minutes. Then we have to give them something that verifies their certificate of, their CUP with the conditions that they can rely on. And it's a matter of, from start to finish, having everybody on the same page. So when 4 years later, somebody says, oh, did they approve that or didn't they or whatever? It's just crystal clear right from here to there. And it's permanent and everybody's got it and all the same thing. So we'll just do it in the form of, seeing that it is hereby resolved. We just do resolution and bold capital so it jumps out of the minutes. So after all the discussion, you do the resolution. Then you take the roll call vote and you show how each person voted yay or nay. And if you get three votes, it passes, or by the corner. Conditional use permits, you have the, you already know this, you can grant them, you can deny them, or you can grant them with conditions. Your legal test is important here, and one thing I wanted to kind of point out to you, how should you be addressing the way you talk about something, that you, how you feel about something? All too often I've heard, and this is very natural, we all do it, we talk about our personal preferences. I like this, I don't like that. You should really try to kind of avoid that language, because the people in the audience are entitled to say, hey, I like this, I don't like that. When you're in the audience, you can say it to the town council. But when you're in the official capacity, you're held to a different standard, because the words, I like X, I don't like X, is prima facie, which means right on its face, a judge can look at that in a record and say, that's arbitrary and capricious. And arbitrary and capricious is the kiss of death when matched against your duty of the health, safety, and welfare of the entire town and all of its residents and property owners. So language becomes very important. And I don't expect that you would have known this, but as we go along, part of the zoning administrator job is, if you read Section 305, is to interpret, is to inform, is to make sure that the ordinance is here. And most of all, make sure that what you do, to the degree we can do it, is legal. So what you recommend to the town council, I just want to make sure that you're on good, sound footing, both case law, the statutory law, and the way you proceed and you give your factual basis. If you remember briefly, we talked about the Moab case. They denied a bed and breakfast over there. It was the town council who denied it, but they reserved to themselves the CUP authority. And so they said the language in there that was in the record was Council Member A said, oh, there'll be too much traffic. I talked to the neighbors. Council Member B said, oh, yeah, none of them like it. I don't like it. And what the court said is, well, you didn't show any traffic studies. It was a child care center. How many trips a day were parents making to drop kids off and pick them up? How many kids were in the pet center versus how many rooms? Why was no study? Why is no factual basis presented there? And then what is your ordinance? And how did it meet your own ordinances? Did you follow your own ordinance and law there? So it kind of came down to, really what it came down to is, too many of this things going on, let's deny this one. And, they might have been able to deny it, but they have to create a better record.
Yes.
So that's why what we say on the record matters, and that's why what we write out. So, like, if we were to deny something, I would be doing a factual thing, laying it out, and then saying, okay, how do you want to approach this? What are the facts that back this up? I mean, is it crowding? Is it growth? Is it, something the general plan violates? I mean, exactly what is it that you can, base this decision upon, both in fact and in law? And we'll turn over all the stones. We'll have the best record, because if you deny one, and it's an important one to somebody, then we can end up in litigation. And so part of my job is to protect that and make sure that, you're on good, strong, as strong as we can make it. There's a whole bunch of tests here. I'm not going to belabor them, because we're going to constantly be coming back and forth to them, because you've got a pretty ambitious program outlined here in terms of wanting to revamp the table of uses. And so we have to think in terms, if you remember the Sandy case, the Brown versus Sandy case, the presumption goes with landowners. So they have the presumption on property rights. The town has the burden of showing that in the best interest of the health, safety, and welfare of the town, that you want to restrict that property right. So property rights are, a giant bundle. A lot of judges use a bundle of sticks analogy. And when you restrict property right, you start removing some sticks. So the landowner is less left with a smaller bundle of rights around the property. That's just what ordinances do. They deprive people of certain rights. The other thing, just from a selfish point of view, is I took this job on for Steve, and because I saw a lot of things in town that I think we could do better. So part of what I want to do is leave the process better than I found it. So I'm trying to work with Judy, trying to work with Peg, a lot with Steve, and I'm trying to, you know, how am I going to replace myself? Steve's not going to run again, he says, and I'm definitely done with he's done. So I got 26 months to go. And what's going to happen then? So I want to look around. I've talked to Caden over at the county. He's a pretty good planner. He's written some ordinances for tropic. I want to see if he'll help. Who else is available? I've really got bogged down lately in building permits and things on the yard, et cetera, et cetera. Quite surprised on that. And conditional use permits. So I've got to separate that part of the job out too if I'm going to do this part of it. And so Steve is, you know, trying to help me there. We're going to try and find, even considering a paid position, a part-time paid position to handle permits and initial intakes and so forth. But, you know, with a couple of years left, I'd like to be able to train somebody and work with them so that, you know, things can kind of continue to go on and it's not like falling backwards. And then the other thing, you know, for me is my time. This is just, you know, personal very quickly in 60 seconds or less. I value my time now above a lot of other things. And I'll give you an example. It's not your fault. You didn't think about it. I've never addressed it before. But in July, I threw the picture of the ranch gate and the sign up on the screen, and here's what they're applying for, down to 8 feet. And somebody in the audience or on the commission said, oh, I like it better up there. Somebody else said, oh yeah, I do too. I said, well, you know, I thought about that too. I can amend it if you want. By a unanimous decision, you said, yeah, go ahead and amend it, do that. Okay, fine. So when I came back in August, and you pretty much squelched it and tossed it, I thought, I should have really gone a deeper dive there, because I said, you know, you're not going to amend an ordinance. And by the time you said meeting, the reason, because when I amend an ordinance, I try to look at case law, I try to look at statute to cover the basis, and then I do the wording of the ordinance, and then I fuss with it a lot. So, you know, a day hike blown off, basically, and that's important to me. So, lesson learned for me, and also, I hope, for you guys, that let's work through things enough so if I'm going to amend something, then I know my time's not going to be wasted. Now, I don't mind tweaking it at all, but I don't want it scrapped after you tell me to do it. The other thing is, it's very easy in this room on the second Thursday of the month to get into kind of an echo chamber. So the other thing that I think you need to consider is, well, what about the town council? They're the authority here. They're the ones that have to vote on this and pass it. And when I did the ADU ordinance, Steve said, we need to correct this. There's been a controversy for years. Let's get this straightened out. So I went to the town council. Steve presented it to the town council. We need to get this straightened out. Kind of took a straw poll. You guys on board with it? Yeah. And so when it went back to the town council, they were prepared. We had some communication and coordination, and it passed. Same with the subdivision ordinance correcting the water situation. Before I brought it to you, I asked Steve, I said, will you bounce this off the town council so I know that I'm on the right beam? Then I brought it to you for all the sausage making and so forth, and going through it, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. but with some assurance that when it goes back up, it's not going to not pass. The ISTR ordinance, on the other hand, was a squeaker getting passed, and that did not go first to the town council. They had no input, they had no foreknowledge of it, there was no coordination there, and it passed 3-2 after all that work. So, you know, we're not in a typical scenario here. If we were in a typical scenario here, even of a town like the size of Springdale, which is, you know, not that big a town, it's still a town, it's under 750 people, they have a city manager, because they have money, they have a city manager, they have a professional planner, and they have a town attorney that comes to frequently to their meetings. So the planning commission's role, basically, the mayor says to the city manager and the planning commission, we have to address this crowding, this parking, we have to address this, so we got too many of these. And so it really kind of comes through that process, and then the planner does all this, you know, work on it, city manager, and the mayor's really on board, and the mayor presumably has his council, you know, he knows what they're going to do. And so then it goes to the PC, and they do all the sausage making. We don't have that here, so you guys kind of become de facto planners in conjunction with me. And so what I want to do is, given the uniqueness of the situation, and there's no way to change it, we don't have the money to change it, hire a professional planning staff and do all that, maybe decades from now. But, so what I want to do is ask the mayor, how can we have better coordination on things you're trying to do so that we're kind of on the same page? And so you go forward with some assurance that we don't spend hours and hours doing a whole bunch of stuff and then, you know, it just goes nowhere. All right, that's all I have to say.
Thank you. I mean, I personally, this is a personal thing, coming into doing this when you don't know anything about law and the city ordinances. This information is just invaluable, and I really appreciate you giving us this information. Thank you, Curtis.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then we'll go ahead and move on to our continuing discussion on the zoning ordinance and table of uses. And Peg, what was the last one?
Yes, you left off at guest bench.
No, but remember I told you that there was another thing at the end of the table. There was table of uses and something else.
Oh, the economic opportunity schedule.
We seem to have dropped the... Say that again?
Economic opportunity.
Okay. Because that was another thing in July that you asked from us. And so we've been looking at zoning ordinances and the table of uses, but we seem to have dropped the economic opportunity. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Curtis, was each time we change one of these sections here and we... Oh, and Peg, did you make any copies? Did you make copies of this?
I did. You are welcome to that one.
You have two?
But you can have it.
I did make copies.
There's one right
okay.
here.
But I didn't bring them with me.
So... Okay, you guys saw this online? Oh, that's the
all
first
one.
Page. That's okay. So,
would you like me to go make?
So, Curtis, each time we change a heading,
that's what Peg sent out today.
What does that entail? When we make changes in this, what's the bottom? What's the outcome? Do you understand what I'm asking you?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Because we're making these changes, and I'm very aware now of what you just said. So, are we doing this the best way we can, and how does this go forward? I mean, how do you change this?
No, you're fine. I saw what Peg was doing. It's a green template. I wish I could get this.
Okay, that's the one Peg sent out today that I printed this afternoon.
And as far as how you address it,
if
you're saying how do you change the table of uses,
yeah.
You amend it in the process. So the town council will go through, you've already rearranged the table of uses to add whatever amendments you're doing. And there's two parts. There's the table of uses and the use definitions.
Yeah.
And so you amend both of them.
As a whole?
Yeah, I reprinted the whole thing.
Okay, as a whole.
Exactly.
Okay.
So on the RSTR, that's the latest copy of both the table of uses and the use definitions, because that's the last time we amended anything. So I took everything, reincorporated, then I underlined that which was new in that ordinance. And so that's your most recent version, and the answer is yes, you can. You know, you can amend it, and technically speaking, that's not a problem. The one thing I would add to that as you go through this is I don't think you're just dealing with the table of uses and the use definitions, because some of the things you want to accomplish here, that could be inadequate. But practically speaking, it may be the way you want to do it. When they became concerned about an RV park coming into Boulder years ago, they had the attorney draft an ordinance, and that ordinance is very detailed about what it requires, and I think it's a very good ordinance, but it's 4 pages long. But that's kind of the preferable way to do something if you really want to nail it down. You've got a motel that's 3 sentences long, or 4 or 5, whatever it is, and then you've got an RV park that's 4 or 5 pages long. So, you know, on the other hand, we have to coordinate with the town council because in some instances, and Steve will have to address this, simpler is better. So I don't know how to reconcile those two things.
Like an example.
Well, hey, you looked at the chart right here that Peg made. What did you think of that? I mean, are we heading in the right direction as far as...
That's a working tool. That's great.
So, is that an example, Matt? I mean,
it's just intended to... I mean, you guys have talked about this several months.
Right.
And in some cases, some of the comments are repetitive from other comments that have been made. So, I only went back to July. I think the conversation's been going on for longer than that on some of these things, but... So all I try to do is capture comments made in the July, the August, September, and so on and so forth meetings about, as you're going through and you're making just comments. So you've always got the minutes to fall back on, but this is just kind of a short summary of...
And then you're going to take this and put these suggestions and ideas into wording. Is that correct?
Once you actually decide what you're doing.
Right.
This is not what you've decided. This is only what you have talked about.
Right.
Thanks for this, Peg. I mean, when we did the general plan with Josie, when we, two of us were reworking that, Josie had something similar yet even more detailed. And the way our working meetings happened is we were doing the work and this was being typed in onto this at the same time, more or less. So it was all...
Yeah,
we weren't losing.
You have to go back all your minutes. It's keeping current track of where you're at with it. Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
That's not the final form by any means. That's
no.
For your discussion purposes.
No. I just okay. So then we left off with guest ranch, correct?
I think you got through guest ranch.
We got through guest ranch, and you haven't been here, Curtis. And so then we have, let's see, home child care. And I mean, so home child care, home occupation, home preschool are all under permitted use. They're all under all the different zoning districts. Is everyone okay with that? Are we leaving that the way it is? And then the next one hotel. Hotel. Does anybody want to read that? Does everybody have a copy of what it says? I would like to lower the guest rooms. I don't know if we can.
Which one?
What about home occupation?
Home occupation?
Yeah, it should go home daycare. Next one.
Home occupation. It was those three. Do you want to look at home occupation? We can go back to that, Josie.
Yeah.
What is it that you properly provided?
So we've had a lot of conversations on this in the past about, you know, one of the things that came up in our work groups was that folks felt they weren't able to, you know, do activities from their home as a living because of the restriction that was in here. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I have a lot of notes here, so maybe just one second to catch up. Okay. I brought in an example from Esclami, it looks like, and it is a lot more detailed. Ours is pretty brief. It says, an activity carried out for gain by a resident and conducted entirely within the resident's home and or a separate building of no more than 750 square feet is clearly incidental and accessory to the residential use of the dwelling or property, and provided that the home occupation does not change the residential character of the residents, does not result in noise, vibration, light, odor, dust, smoke, or other air pollution noticeable were it beyond the property line, does not include any outside storage of goods, materials, or equipment, has no signage, complies with all federal and state licensing requirements, and complies with all local licensing requirements. So from Escalante, theirs is similar, but it doesn't have a 750 square foot limitation. It has occupying no more than 25% of the dwelling unit.
So it's not a separate structure.
It is not.
A separate building of no more than 750. So is there a building at all mentioned?
Yeah, it's just it can't be more than 25% of the dwelling structure.
Yet the bolder one says it can be within the resident's home and or a separate.
Which I think is important, especially since we have ADUs.
Right.
But one that we've been talking about is, what if you have employees? Right? How many vehicles is, you know, bringing employees, setting that up outside a home occupation? Is it therefore then commercial? Are you manufacturing goods that you're selling retail? These are all things that we've discussed in the past. So the Escalante one extends to no more than one person is employed in the home occupation or office of a professional person on the premises in addition to the residing family. So that is a limitation that would take our particular examples of folks that maybe were employing one or two people. That would limit that and not allow it.
Yeah.
Right? This one goes into structure. Where inventory and supplies are kept, I think we covered that. Signs we cover.
Yeah.
No displays are covered. This one has, the home occupation shall not generate pedestrian or vehicle traffic in excess of that customarily associated with the zone in which the use is located. And we've talked about that, how many vehicles are going to be parked there, are people coming and going, are they buying a product from the home, and so on. This one does not put a demand on the municipality utility services among what would be in excess of a residential home. And they have occupation permits for a year, home occupation permits, which I don't think we currently do, right?
That's issued by the town.
Don't we issue a building permit? I mean,
just a business license.
Yeah, business license, we do. Yeah,
and they are for a year.
You could make it conditional use permit so that you know what's going on.
So it just expands a bit, and this is something that's come up, and it's been, I think, one of the driving forces of people asking us to look at the ordinances. It's because they want to generate income from their homes. So the farm stand that would be included right now is only in commercial. If we had the ag zone, that was something that was commonly in an ag zone, and I think that does fit into the bolder character because that is growing products, agriculture products, could be sold on premises if you are in an ag zone. I don't know. I just think it's worth discussion, especially the employee issue. I think that's the number one for me.
So you want to go back, maybe highlight that and then go back and talk, think about it and. Or do you want to do this right now?
What are your thoughts on it, please?
We've had some feedback from some citizens that, you know, having employees didn't seem that it was stretching beyond a home occupation, but I think there should be a limit.
Yeah.
If we're going to allow it, let's cap it. I mean, what does take that into a commercial activity?
Does this planning mention anything about the size of the lot?
It doesn't say anything about the lot.
Well, would that be a legitimate factor to consider? I mean, having a home occupation on 40 acres would be different than having it on 1 acre in terms of an employee, parking, etc.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we do cover that what do we say on manufacturing goods?
Did anyone else look at, I also looked at the Escalante, that was the only other comparative one that I looked at. Did anyone else look at other ones for this one?
No, I didn't.
That was the one I read as well.
The only thing that I have to say really is as far as home occupation and activity carried out for the game by a resident and conducted entirely. I mean, that's, you're talking about the resident and even I feel like keeping it kind of confined to that. And then if you're going to go bigger, you know, you know what I'm saying? So like you said, maybe one employee, but it, you're actually talking about carried out for the gain of by a resident. It doesn't talk about employees or, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there basically as far as keeping it at this instead of adding one employee, adding more parking. I mean, is that, as far as, you know what I'm, you know, what do you think about that?
I think it could be defined in this. I think we could expand on parking, employees. Yeah. Also, I think right now we're limited to where there's really no retail sales necessarily in home occupation. I think that's up for discussion. I mean, this, Escalante says, retail sales on the premises shall be limited to merchandise directly related to the services offered by the home occupation. So I think about, okay, for example,
I do like that sentence.
Let's take the acupressure, which is in a commercial zone, but if it was at a home and you're selling supplements and whatever else, it is in direct relation to the occupation.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Right.
I think that's good language. And let's take making herbal products and health items. That would still fit into that, in my mind, that it's retail sales directly related to what the occupation is.
I like
that. You're growing herbs, you're making products.
Yeah.
But does that take us into commercial because it's retail sales?
Well, we have Airbnbs. That's commercial. I mean, is that not a commercial sale? Is that not commercial?
That's been my point of view on Airbnb since the beginning.
Yeah.
It's a commercial.
Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, it's a tough one. Home occupation. I like the name. You know, you're just making something in your house. But the idea of retail sales is from your home is a difficult one for a lot of people who live in a residential neighborhood who don't want people driving to come pick up stuff. I mean, and then if you're making residential sales, but you're not allowed to have a sign, you know, so then we're sort of word of mouth or commission, or you're selling at the farmer's market, or you're, you know, I don't have an answer, I'm just sort of talking about
I think a lot of that is what this is about.
Yeah, it's about, we're talking about size and how do we put a definition on the side, you know, dealing with the ordinance seems so difficult to me as opposed to a conditional use permit, but I don't want to be someone who has to sit here and have every home occupation come here and have to go through a whole conditional use permit, and then we have to figure each one customized out. Seems tricky as well.
I agree. I think if we had it well defined here, the CUP would not be necessary.
Yeah.
So should we just leave it at that as far as what you, was there anything else that you thought that you want to add in, Josie? I mean,
no.
So that's adding base, I mean, just an employee, parking, the retail sales, and there was another one. So,
whatever else that
big houses. This was limited to 750 square feet.
Yeah.
And it may be more appropriate to the 25% of the existing dwelling for this.
Or we might want to dovetail to how our ADU ordinance works in the size relation.
Size relation to the size of the lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any comments?
I have to think about employees and retail sales. I'd like to talk to people in the town about that as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, given our general plan and, you know, keeping the rural character,
I think it's
really important to put a lot of thought into retail sales outside of commercial zones.
I think, too, it's not just employees, but looking at it as a bigger thing for a lot of the ones you're saying is it could be also like an apprentice, right? So it's people.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily an employee.
Yeah.
And so looking at it as people.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Okay.
And so we have home preschool, and then does anybody have anything to say about that?
No.
Okay. And then hotel, we were looking at that. Every hotel, or do you like the 30 guest rooms? I'd like to really, every place that we have right now has less than 22 rooms. So this is
that's probably
quite a bit more.
We don't have a sewer system.
Yeah. So that's my only comment.
So
is I'd like to see
that we look at it to see if we could lower the number?
I do. Okay. Yep. Okay, and then does anyone else have any comments? And then we could move on to intermediate secure treatment facility programs for minors, which we don't allow, it looks like, in any. And then light manufacturing.
I brought in an example from Springdale. Okay, so what zones is that in?
Currently, it's just in commercial.
Okay.
But in past meetings, we've talked about GMU.
Right. Okay, let me scroll back down. Sorry. Okay. It might be very similar to what we have. Okay, a little bit different. Our last sentence says that light manufacturing generally includes processing and fabrication of finished products, predominantly from previously prepared materials, and includes processes that do not require extensive floor areas or land areas. In Springdale, they have it manufacturing small-scale assembly and production is their definition. And it's an operation that processes a raw or unfinished material, so that's different, into a finished product by a single person or a group of three or fewer skilled workers, and that has limited impacts on surrounding properties. Examples include DVE authoring and software production of boutique soaps and lotions, and production of custom or artisan objects such as furniture. This definition does not include any manufacturing primarily using automated machines or assembly lines. That definition would fit more into zones outside commercial. Because that has been something that's been brought up several times, is why can't we do light manufacturing in our GMU or other zones?
My suggestion is that for light manufacturing to GMU, it would have to be like a conditional use permit, because it's so case by case where it's going to end up. But commercial,
But this is where the boutique soaps and lotions, artisans, products, furniture, that's where that falls into something that makes sense, that it could be done outside of a commercial zone. And it goes beyond home occupation as it's currently defined.
Right.
It's a conditional use right now.
It is, good, yeah.
Yeah. So where
do we have any intel?
Not that I'm aware of.
But it's not a conditional use in a commercial zone.
It is.
It is. It's conditional use in commercial only.
In commercial only.
Mm-hmm. Which is, but it's still conditional. Which
it
is,
seems like it should be given in commercial.
Yeah.
It should be allowed.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's conditional. Mm-hmm. I thought. That was fun. That's what I wrote in my notes, that I didn't understand that.
Those are just the way that the planner that was hired, who lives in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily stylized for Boulder, so you...
So we're looking at putting in GMU to also? Is that what you're saying?
Josie, would you mind rereading, I apologize, but the beginning of the Springdale one?
Of our definition, Springdale, sorry. Okay, yeah, just one second. Get that down there.
As well as just sending it to us. Because that wasn't one that I looked at.
So first, let me read ours, and then... for everyone, and then I'll compare it to Springdale. So our definition is the assembly, fabrication, or processing of goods and materials using processes that ordinarily do not create noise, smoke, fumes, odors, glare, or health or safety hazards outside of the building or lot where such assembly, fabrication, or processing takes place, where such processes are housed entirely within a building or with the area occupied by outdoor storage of goods and materials used in such processes does not exceed 25% of the floor area of all buildings on the property. Light manufacturing generally includes processing and fabrication of finished products, predominantly from previously prepared materials, and includes processes that do not require extensive floor areas or land areas. Compared to Springdale, there's this manufacturing, small-scale assembly and production, an operation that processes a raw or unfinished material into a finished product by a single person or a group of three or fewer skilled workers, and it has limited impacts on surrounding properties. Examples include DVE authoring and software production, production of boutique soaps and lotions, and production of custom or artisan objects such as furniture. This definition does not include any manufacturing primarily using automated machines or assembly lines. I think a hybrid between the two.
Yeah.
And there's something I'd add that's missing to both, and that is anyone who's probably doing manufacturing is going to be shipping or distribution, which means they're going to be having traffic and stuff in there. So that should be
GPS guy.
We need to make sure we need to define that a little bit better. Ingress and egress.
Well, we figured out two different definitions, one for in the residential and GMU zones, depending on the size of the lot, and then one in the commercial. It seems if you do have a commercial operation, let's say the gravel, the batch plant up here, which it's a manufacturing of cement. And so if it's got a conditional use permit, you know exactly what it's going to do, and if we're in commercial, then you know that's one thing. Who's it disturbing? What's going on? What's the value added? Does it create jobs, etc.? Then you've got light manufacturing, like you're talking about, in more of a residential zone.
I like that.
And now you're concerned with traffic. You're concerned with the different, you know, the different elements of combining residential with the business and etc. and satisfying some needs for people in town.
Mm. I agree. And it could be as simple as just light manufacturing / residential, light manufacturing / commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we do have an example of somebody who does that up in our subdivision. You've got Silas. He's got a shop there where he makes furniture. Mm-hmm. And that would fit under that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's in.
And it may make our home occupation definition simpler, because then it can back that .com to, basically it's a service, you know, not necessarily retail.
Yeah, it's more home occupation.
But he's in high density, too.
Yeah. It's quote, he's my home occupation.
That's true, too.
That's okay,
he's
yeah.
People.
That's yes. True, too. But, okay. Okay, are we done with that one? You want to move? So the same thing with motel? Same thing. The only thing I
there's a couple before that, but I don't have anything to add to them.
Like,
there's mobile food business and mobile
home. I don't have that. Let's see. I don't have the most current one.
The suggestion last time of looking at the rester ordinance and the complete
the completed and fully compilated thing is in the back of that. So go to the back of the short-term residential rental ones when you can online.
That's exactly, but it's not printed out. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So Josie, go ahead and tell, so what's next?
So there's mobile food business, and I think that was brought in 2015.
So, yeah.
I don't have anything to add to it. Okay. Then there's mobile home, and that one is just the
definition.
Mobile home.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's motel.
Okay, so mobile food business. I wanted to look at that one.
Actually, I have something.
Yeah.
The mobile home stated as a transportable factory-built housing unit. Oh, let's not go there.
Okay.
Never mind.
So let's go to motel. Does anybody have
it? Well, it's prior to 1976 because the code changed.
Okay,
that.
Right.
And there may be a couple of those still in town,
yeah.
But not many.
So motel.
Motel.
Building or group of buildings containing guest rooms, some of all of which have a separate entrance leading directly from the outside of the building with a garage or parking space located on the lot and designed, used or intended wholly or in part for the accommodation of automobile transients. There again, I think 30 rooms is big. I'd like to cut those down to cut it in half. Just on the basis that that's what we already have in town.
Let's do some research on septic and sewer and see why is there even a number right now.
Yeah.
Boilerplate number, it seems like.
And I don't think we should cut it below what is existing.
Yeah.
So what's our, what
22 is?
22.
22, yep. Could live with, yeah. I mean, it's not a lot, but I mean, all it is just a change in number to keep it what we have. Okay. Outpatient treatment facility program, not permitted. Does anybody have any comments on that?
It's not permitted anywhere.
Oh, I should have looked at that, sorry.
You're
okay, let me go back.
That's why we're all here.
Okay, thank you. Professional offices, which is in commercial. Does everybody has a copy of this, right, that they can
mm-hmm.
read? Billing for, does anybody have any comments on that?
So the last time at one of our meetings, and I don't know, because I haven't written the dates next to all of them, but the professional offices, at some point, people talked about how they believed it should be conditional use in all. And I don't remember who said it or why or how, but at some previous meeting it was stated.
I think it was in July,
that's
and Harry and I were tossing that back and forth
yeah.
a bit. And if our home occupation is clearly defined, professional offices as this is defined, would fit still fit in commercial and not need to be brought in. Because I think the intent here is that this is going to have a lot of traffic. It's going to have a parking lot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, artists and musicians, I don't know how they got stuck in there.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Because, to, you know, for one, give piano lessons.
True.
Or painting class.
That's true.
That doesn't really fit in professional offices. It fits in home occupation.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Is there a barter out there?
Okay, public uses and utilities. Public use, is everybody okay with that?
That's one that we need to look at. Not necessarily in terms of definition, but right now we have the definition, we have the table of uses, but some of it, including the building we're sitting in, is in a residential zone. And it's, you know, I started into that over a year ago, and then we got busy with all the other stuff, so I still got that work. So when we get looking at this, I'll just put that back on the table for you to look at. And I mean, there's problems when you don't zone things correctly. For example, the Anasazi is in a residential zone. It's not zoned commercial or a special zone for public use commercial, and therefore, you know,
I thought we
the mobile trailer, we didn't ever change it. We never followed through. We got busy on other things.
Okay.
But, you know, the burrito stand It's not allowed in residential, it's supposed to be a commercial, and so it's like we should, as we go through here, if there's an opportunity to kind of straighten that stuff out, we should look at it and see if we can do it, make it one-stop shopping.
None of it was changed when we talked about it? I thought we changed
it. Yeah, we talked about it.
But it never, okay, fell through the cracks. Jeez, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's my fault, probably, but anyway.
No, it's not.
I'm sure you would circle back to it someday.
Yeah. So we will be looking at that later. Recreational facility, place either indoor or outdoor, design and equipment for the conduct of sport and leisure time activities. So that's a conditional use permit under GMU and commercial. Anybody have anything to say about that? Recreational vehicle or RV.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you targeted that for looking at the definition?
Recreation facility, no.
It's never.
What about parking? What about the size of the building? What about the size of the lot? What's the difference in what the Astrodome? I definitely think that needs to be more well-defined.
That's a good point.
And I question it being a GMU zone.
Because
of those reasons. What is it really? Is it,
Golf course.
We have that discussion at the resort, which is going to be probably the bulk of the evening. But, right, I mean, is this a pasture that's been paved for tennis courts? I mean, why is it being allowed in GMU?
I'm going to put a World Federal Wrestling pit in my place.
Right.
Yes.
I always wanted that next door. So you're saying that we should really take a look at this then? I mean, I hear you, especially with the growth and things going on.
What you're trying to do here is you're trying to make sure that, things fit a definition, and where a definition could possibly have big ramifications, it's two sentences long, you definitely want to take a look at it. I don't necessarily think you have to worry about whether it's in GMU or not, because in GMU they've got a lot of, generally speaking, they've got enough ground, but you may get conditional use, and some of the factors are how much ground do they have? What's the access off the highway?
Right.
I'll use Jackie's Theater as an example. Put it right on the highway if she ever gets it past all the hurdles. But,
right.
It's right on the highway. It's in GMU. Have plenty of room. It's part of a ranch. So as we craft the definition, it's always helpful to use examples and say, how can we make sure that definition fits what we intend?
Well, then should we all take a look at it? Or, maybe we should take a look, each one of us, at what a recreational facility in other places look like.
Yeah,
thank you, Curtis, for...
Yeah. I think it lends a good argument to having a separation between agriculture and GMU, if this is the type of activity in GMU, being that this type of activity is going to take away prime farmland.
Yeah.
So is this like a park or a ball field?
Did you
would
say
fit
that?
To something like
well,
this?
Well, that's what...
What'd
you say?
Unless it's a rodeo.
Yeah, yeah. Unless it's a rodeo, that's true. Yeah, I think we need to take a look at this. And thank you, Curtis, for looking at that.
So we can all look at that one and bring stuff for next time.
Yeah.
And come back to that one.
Yeah.
Okay,
recreation vehicle or RV. On my table of uses, I have RV and campground parks added by the adoption of Ordinance 51. Is that what you guys have? And then recreational vehicle or mobile home as interim residence during construction. Those are all conditional use permits under all zones. And then it has a definition of what a recreational vehicle or RV is.
I just have highlighted the conditional in GMU again for the same reason
of
farmland.
For the first one?
Right. The recreational vehicle or mobile home as an interim residence during construction is very important.
Yeah, that's. I just wanted to make sure you were only talking about the top one.
I think that the year CUP for that is very reasonable for our location. But having an RV and campground park in our ag zones, I question.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and then the recreational vehicle or mobile home as interim residence. Okay, so same. So you're talking about both of them. Is that what you said?
I think the definition for the recreation vehicle is fine as stands. I question the table of uses on the campground, RV and campground parks. Being that it's conditional in GMU and it's conditional in commercial. And my question is that separation between a general management zone and an agricultural zone.
It's conditional in all zones.
No, the interim residence is conditional in all zones. Go up one above that, and you've got the RV and campground parks.
I might have outdated one, but I'll
mine. I was going to say mine are all
mine says conditional. Both of them are conditional in all zones in the copy I have. It might not be the most up-to-date.
It's not.
Okay.
So I'm the same
thank
way.
You.
Okay, thank you. Yes, same thing.
So it's been brought up for discussion before?
Yeah. Okay. And then residential facility for elderly persons. Facility as defined by a Utah code, and it's not allowed in commercial.
Sorry, repeat what you just said.
Residential facility for elderly persons. And the only definition is a facility as defined by a Utah code.
It's permitted in all zones.
Even commercial?
No.
What
it's
we,
not.
Oh, no, not commercial, sorry.
Yeah. It's conditional in all but commercial.
We need to find that definition out. How many elderly persons is a facility
going to take? So we can put that on
our homework? Yeah, and that was the one I didn't understand why it wasn't permitted in commercial, but everywhere else.
But you're right.
It seemed odd.
So we need to find out how many
it's
people.
Like residential or residences.
Oh, I see. It's a residential versus a commercial. Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Peter.
Still. And the same thing, residential support facility program. And they're not, so the next two aren't allowed. So residential treatment facility program. Do you guys have both of those?
Yeah, they're not.
They're not allowed. And then we come down to resort. Are we on resort? Okay, so we're on resort and it's allowed in GMU.
Okay, so.
And we've had a discussion about that.
And were we talking about just taking it out?
We've talked both about one, you could change it to a commercial, but I've also said that we should drop it as a whole use definition. As resort doesn't seem to fit into the general plan.
So. If it's not in here, it's allowable, right? So we need to better define it and decide if it's going to be allowed in any of these zones. So this is one that I researched, and I found a lot outside of, well, there was some within state, and it looks like I've got Oregon. But resorts are destination resorts, right? And typically in Oregon, they're an overlay of where they're allowed, right? And what is a destination resort? It is, you know, a golf resort. We've already discussed guest ranch, so this is different than guest ranch. This is not a working guest ranch. It's a resort where you have even the possibility of residential facilities because it's a resort location, right? So if you look at the ski resorts in Utah, a lot of those ski resorts have condos and even, you know, duplexes or homes or whatever. You'd have to have some type of a recreational activity that ties to the resort. Overnight lodging ties to the resort, restaurant lounges, convention facilities.
You're saying if we don't have a definition, it's allowable?
Well, that's why we have certain definitions in here that
don't have it on the table.
If you don't
define it, then don't.
And you don't have it in your table, right, then it's not allowed, right?
Yeah, if you don't have it at all defined, you're opening it up.
Gotcha.
And so at our last meeting, Mark Nelson talked about resort and said this was actually on the table at one point with the development up below, right, up north of the town, that was going to be a destination resort. And it didn't go that way, but it was being discussed. So we need to decide, does that fit into the rural character of Boulder? Does it fit our general plan?
So right now it's in commercial JV.
Right. And there would be an acreage, you know, limitation on something like this as well. You know, we talked on the guest ranch. We threw out a number of 35 acres as being the minimum on a guest ranch. You know, that may not be large enough for what a destination resort is defined as.
Well, how well do we have to define it if we don't put it into our zones?
That's true. But I think it should be a little bit more than what it says because that does not
invade. If you're leaning toward trying to disallow it, then I'll just research a little bit.
If
you just have a blank space through the the table of uses, it's not allowed in any zone.
Right.
But you've defined it, so you're aware of it.
Yeah.
Now, we considered it. It's kind of like residential treatment facility,
right? Yeah.
Required by state law that you have. You address it in your code, and then Bruce Parker just left it all blank because we don't want one.
Right.
So they say, we're aware.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the best thing just because I don't think
the one that I started
the general plan.
The one that I started to look at and I didn't get as far, but the one that is in Kane County.
Judy Drain and I have liked to golf. Come on, you guys.
The what's that one called?
Should
we pick up the big one? Did you know what I'm saying? That is the one that I was looking up to get an idea of how, because that is what the one that's out by Big Water. I'm blanking on the name of it.
The Amangari?
Yeah, that is considered
a resort.
A resort, and so figuring out what the wording is, and that was where I was looking to figure that one out. But I think that might be looking at Kane County and seeing what that and kind of using their definition.
Have you ever heard of that?
Making it our own from there.
Have you ever heard of the Amangari? That's not the word. I mean, I'm probably butchering it. But down in Kane County, out by Big Water, that is
a resort. It's a resort.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Middle East. I've never been there.
So that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been there.
I think it's 1,000 miles from right.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I would just believe that.
Because I looked it up.
You know?
Yeah.
You could make that fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a high
we're
security.
Research.
And that's the one. When I was looking up this from last month to this month, that was the closest one I could find to us that was not based on skiing and not based on a golf course because it doesn't have those things. Right, because I was thinking of what could come here, looking at what are possibilities, and that was the closest one I could come up with. But how that fits into this, I didn't get into that. But looking at a non-specific recreational resort.
So is it like a hotel or something?
Yeah, and it has a restaurant on its property, and you know, I think it had. But yeah, I mean, but it's not. It doesn't tie to like what you think of. You know, as a beach resort, a golf resort, ski resort, right?
It's more like a spa, I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, people are coming here for quiet use and getting out in the wilderness. Yeah. Why create some sort of false reality destination?
No. You know, but I was just saying, trying to look at what would people do here, right? If you were, and then trying to figure it out from there. But what I was going to bring up was, Josie, what I read back in our notes of people saying, should we just get rid of it? And mine was going to be, if that it should be defined and then empty in the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Do you want to keep going, or it's 8:30? What do you think?
That was the last one I had comments on, so.
Yeah.
We might be able to zip through it and check it off as to go back now and do homework on what we discussed.
Okay, so let's keep on going. So school would be the next one. It's love and everything. What'd you say?
Restaurant and retail.
Oh, restaurant. I'm sorry. Restaurant. Does anybody have any comments on that? I kind of liked it.
In commercial.
And it's only in commercial. Retail, sale, and services. Only in commercial?
We've talked about needing a definition.
Because I don't have a definition. Do you have a definition in the new one? Oh.
I'll scroll down real quick.
Retails. I thought there
Mine
was.
Mine obviously not the most recent.
Mine's not either.
There is not a definition. That's so that should fall, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have, I have in my notes, it's missing a definition.
So, okay. So we need a definition.
I guess my question is, why is it conditional and commercial? And same with restaurant. Why do we, you know, why is it not permitted? Why do they have to have a permit?
I agree.
May I add something?
Yeah.
That was one of the conversations in a lot of the conditional use trainings that have happened over the years, is there is a place for conditional uses, obviously, but going through something what you just said and making it permitted where it makes sense. I mean, try to minimize the use of conditional uses where you could just make it permitted in a specific zone. So
should we just move it?
So we need a definition.
I think that's a general statement for the whole commercial zone, because there's nothing that's permitted in our table of uses. It's all conditioned or temporary. We have such a limited commercial zone anyway.
The reason for that is because you have two choices in planning. You go through and you do a large rezone, which is what most towns would do at a certain point, where they have the staff and do all the studies and everything. And they would basically say, it wouldn't just be ad hoc zoning, because that's what we have now. What was commercial when we did the map back in 1998? Okay, what was commercial? State commercial. Nothing else was made commercial. And so if you're going to permit something, the thought was, okay, well then zone some stuff commercial and just, okay, that's what we want. That's what can go in commercial. That's permitted. But if you don't have the zone, now you have to go through the rezoning, and you're like, well, what are you going to do? So it was a kind of a control feature, giving our size, the size of our ordinances, our staff, and so on and so forth. So now if something comes along that the town wants, first they have to have the property rezoned for it, like a restaurant, if it's only in commercial, which I think it is, isn't it? And it's a conditional use. Okay, what kind of restaurant, da 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 da. So you can kind of do it either way. You could do it at the rezoning part, or we want to rezone it for a restaurant, but then what if the restaurant fails, and now it's in commercial, and then it can be, well, anything that's allowed in commercial, and so all of a sudden it can be something totally different. So the conditional use is not a great
that
idea. The towns
have
implemented it as a control mechanism, but I thought long and hard about this, and I'm not sure.
Let me too. So when all that stuff was written originally, a conditional use was a control. In fact, after LEPA, it's effectively permitted, unless you can find some real conditions in the ordinance, it's permitted. It just means there's a little bit more, a lot more paperwork that everyone has to go through.
Well, it is
a conditional use.
It's part of the definition too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. If your definition is three sentences long, then it's permitted if you meet the three sentences. But if it's an RV park, you've got to meet 4.5 pages long.
So I think we need to keep a CUP until we're really sound with our definitions.
Okay, so we're going to leave them as they are, correct?
Well,
there are the restaurant.
At a time, you can look at it, but I think Matt's right. You have to kind of, what else do we have?
Yeah. Right now, we're in a long honing down method. So.
Okay, so homework is adding retail sales and services definitions.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, school. Any part or any building or part thereof that is designed, constructed, or used for education or instruction. You guys can read, by public or private organization, by excluding preschool, but excluding preschool center. It's permitted with the conditional use in all of our zones. Anybody have any comments?
No.
Okay, single family dwelling. And this, it says single and went on the the table of uses, it's single family dwelling on a legal lot of record. And in the definitions, it's just one sentence. Building arranged or designed to be used for and containing one dwelling unit. That's an odd definition to me. And it's permitted.
And then there's a definition for legal lot of record, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, when you tie the different definitions together, it's addressed in different places. You have to read them in tandem.
Okay. Social detoxification facility program. There's a definition, and it's not permitted. Temporary use.
We have special events here.
Oh, I don't have that. Special events?
Read it. Yeah. Page split, sorry. An event advertised to the general public and established for a maximum period of 7 consecutive days per event and limited to 6 such events per property or applicant per calendar year. Special events may include, but are not limited to, nonprofit fundraising activities conducted by a registered nonprofit organization, organized events such as educational, historic, religious, and displays or exhibits, concerts, athletic or recreational events, festivals, street fairs, arts and craft fairs. Doesn't say weddings, does it?
And where is it allowed?
And it says nonprofit.
Yeah,
but not limited to. Okay. It's conditional in all zones.
In all zones?
It's a temporary use in all zones.
Temporary use, correct.
It's not conditional.
Temporary, yeah.
Who issues temporary use
permits? Under the amendment, I issue the temporary use permits, and the enforcement officer issues the long-term temporary permits. I can't remember the cutoff, but the temporary permit is a few days or a couple of weeks or something. The other one can be up to
180 days.
But that's where you're dealing with all the things about noise and timing. And Veterinary clinic.
So that's allowed in commercial and GMU?
Dogs barking.
Well, it's why it's conditional use, but
Just because typical vets have holding.
Yeah.
So.
And it says that in the definition.
Okay.
It says indoor and outdoor animal holding facilities.
Yeah. So. But it's a conditional use. So.
And then wholesale business and storage.
And just one part of that. We do have an ordinance, I believe, about barking dogs. So.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yes.
That could be. Control.
She said I remember that.
The CEB could be revoked if they violate the ordinance after day one or something.
So wholesale business and storage is allowed just in commercial. Yeah. Does anybody have any comments about that one?
Why are business and storage together?
Sell business and storage.
I'm thinking of rental storage units and then business.
It's interesting that those aren't defined in here.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a very common investment mechanism.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Storage units.
Yes. Yeah. Do we want storage units in town?
We might want to consider it, since if it's not defined, it's allowed.
Right. What zones are they in now?
Commercial.
Just commercial?
Yeah.
It's conditional use in commercial.
I'll research that a little bit, but I think that's an overly broad statement, because it's not defined, it's allowed.
Storage units?
Just in general, anything.
I think you're making a general statement. Yeah. It's not defined, and it's allowed.
I thought we discussed it, not
Right.
Seems like the direction that...
Yeah, it's that one liner that said, if it's not here, it's not allowed. And you said,
yeah,
it can't be quite that.
It's, right, I think it's, in general, when the planning training, they talk about how, yeah, it's not,
yeah,
it's not explicitly allowed, not allowed. Not explicitly allowed.
Right.
Not
allowed. Okay.
But there's that case around the same thing.
Right. But that doesn't mean that you can open up a house of ill repute just because it's not defined. Gambling is so there's
there's the law and then there's storage units.
Way to go. We did it. We got through it.
Yeah, so, I really get along with it would be almost impossible to name every single possible.
Peg's trying to take notes of what we're saying, and it's too much.
Well, I want to know how you ended on wholesale business and storage. Is that just needs more research? Is that where you ended this?
I think that one's fine because I don't think that's the intent of storage units. That's for a wholesale business storage.
Oh, okay.
They brought up another topic of
should we do homework on
storage units.
Got it. Thank you.
That was how I interpreted it.
Okay.
We could add just a line to that definition and storage units, whatever.
Yeah. Well, we could. We could add storage units if you wanted to.
I'm going to sell what you store.
Wholesale. Retail storage.
So I'm going to go back to this basically. We we did the table of uses, the definitions too, right? I mean, we're okay with both of those. And then, again, I'm going back to the continued discussion on zoning ordinance, table of uses, and what was the third thing? Economic
opportunity discussion.
Yeah. So we're finished with the table of uses.
Well, wait a minute. I wouldn't say you're finished. You've thrown out a lot of...
Oh, I don't mean that we're finished. I mean for tonight.
Oh, for tonight, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So we're going to, the thing I want to do too is we have final public comments and did anybody have anything to say?
No.
Okay. Sorry. So upcoming business, that's kind of what I was going to.
I see. Okay.
So we'll continue with the table of uses then. For the next meeting.
Question.
Okay.
Now, you're kind of at the stage where you have some things yet to be determined, need research.
Right.
You've kind of nailed down some other things. Do you want me to stick that in the form?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It looks like what you've talked about. Then you have something to bounce off against.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. So
keep
in mind, it'll be a draft of the things you've talked about that seem like you've sort of resolved, you want to have in there, or changes you want to make to the zones. I'll have them marked in some kind of a different color or highlighted.
Exactly like you did this last time, right? That chart that you made.
No, I was actually going to go for the
Yeah. Okay.
And put it in there so then you have that you can then
take a look at. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
So you're on to next month's agenda?
Yes,
On the second page of the handout that I gave you, it's the ag zone stuff. I'd like you to put it on the agenda for next time. I'll do some research. And those are just a lot of questions that you need to kind of run through in your own mind because I need to research this, but when you start talking about taking a zone like an ag zone and placing limitations on it or creating a special zone or whatever, I kind of missed the conversation, but there's some pretty serious legal and political problems with doing that. And so I need to kind of research it. I think you need to look at all those questions and try and answer them in your own mind. How would they bear on the discussion? And that was just a really random, running through just questions I have in my mind. But I think we need to get into that because as I hear you talking, you're saying, oh, well, that's in the GMU. We're going to make that to an ag zone, so that'll take care of itself. And so we really need to think that through, if that's even possible.
Okay.
Okay. So did you get that, Peg?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a public hearing on the Fogel Anson Rester CUP.
And I'm expecting another one, so let's advertise both at the same time. The second one will be Troy and Elizabeth. Troy called me today.
Huh.
I said, roll on.
Okay.
So those go straight to public hearings rather than discussion, straight up with the Planning Commission first, because you review it.
What?
You review it.
Yeah, I review it, sign off is complete. We'll, I get over to Peg, she'll advertise in the paper for the 10-day public hearing.
Okay.
And then, I guess.
Then you would introduce, at the meeting, then you would introduce
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's good.
And... Yes, according to our flowchart, it says that we do it that way.
My question is, does the Planning Commission get a chance to discuss it before a public hearing?
That's, to me, that makes sense. It usually delays the process by a month, but that, Curtis hates me to say things like this. That's the way we've done it,
sure.
And yet our ordinance says the flow is you get it, you make sure it's in compliance, you give
it's
it, schedule
yeah.
a public hearing. It's like...
It seems to put the Planning Commission in a harder spot without having been able to do any work or discussion.
Well, the public hearing doesn't change your decision-making process at all.
I mean, you would have...
It's actually kind of checking the box.
You would have access to the documentation so you'd see it ahead of time, but you wouldn't have the discussion.
Yeah, you'll see the whole package, you'll know exactly what it is. You get the public input, and then you can have your own discussion. But I see your point of...
Yeah.
Doing it beforehand. That's not what the ordinance
I know. But we have done it that way. It kind of makes
I was just following the...
Yeah. I mean, some of them are real cut and dry. Like signs are usually pretty cut and dry. Subdivision some are more complicated.
But it doesn't disadvantage you. I mean, you can ask any questions. You don't have to approve it at that meeting. You can, you know, ask for something else. If it follows the ordinance, and if everything's in there,
So we have a public hearing, and then we close that, and then do we have an opportunity to have, like you just said, discussion?
Absolutely.
If we want.
To, yeah.
But
yeah.
It can either be, yeah, so does that, so we will
yeah,
be talking about it.
Yeah, we don't even have to decide on it if we want to.
No.
Right, but we can.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're saying, but
well,
we can.
Well, certainly you have to make a decision, but,
yeah.
You know, if you need more information, if you
yeah.
feel there's indeterminate situations, you can ask for that more information, and you know,
and you'll have already
have proceed
yeah, okay.
with some, you know,
yeah,
but
okay.
you do not have to decide that night. Now,
you can't just put it off, though.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right,
you know,
no,
arbitrarily and capriciously.
Yeah. okay, so we
was there spoke. Any? Were you expecting any action on that utility thing at all?
The 195 foot tower in the middle of town?
Is that something that needs to be pre-discussed? I mean, it's, I don't know.
They have not come back.
Comcast.com.
Yeah, it was in the email there. They owned the tower. They came for a public hearing back, 12 years ago when they put that up. They promised that it was going to increase cell service in town. Didn't do anything. But it's about a 20-foot, it's one of those towers over there next to the
elementary
the
school.
South Central building. Mm-hmm. Now they want to take that one out and replace it, at least this, they were testing the water, with a 195-foot tower. And so...
And it's currently 20 feet tall, right? Am I wrong on that? Is that what your email had said?
I haven't got a big measure
of
it. You can look at it. It's up. As you look at the front of the building, it's the one on the left side
yeah.
there. It's,
yeah.
You know, 15, 20, I don't know.
195 feet, that's tall.
195 feet.
If it falls over, it's going to hit town council building.
Yeah. Let alone the school.
Yeah.
It seems like one just wants in outside of Henry Hill
playground.
Has anybody noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, and no, yeah.
Where?
Can I get the heading though?
Okay.
Well, they wanted one over in Torrey by the Four Corners, the junction of 12 and 24. That was a big to-do about 5 years ago.
How does all that work even legally? I mean,
you what?
How does that work legally?
Like, can you tell them no?
The way I would approach it, and this is part of the reason that I went through this long page of findings of facts, conclusions of law. So, you know, you get all the structural stuff, you'd say, yeah, but things happen, and you would get a case where those towers actually came down. I mean, that thing, how far is the school bus from that? It might be within 195 feet. I mean, the church, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have to support it with guy wires so it can't possibly fall that way? And that goes clear out where it's huge. I mean, there's so many questions on something like that right in the middle of town. And then that's a case of where you got people that have enough money to litigate it. So you just, if they do come through with it, I'm pretty sure that nobody's going to want it. So we just do all of our findings of fact. We proceed very carefully and document it in stage why the determination is to deny it.
Yeah.
It's up to you. You're the CUP board.
Yeah. And there's, we should be doing research on public health with radio waves as well, being that close to the school.
Whatever. Anything you can think of that could have an adverse impact would want to go into the record.
Should we put it on the agenda, though, or?
No, not until you hear back from them and they fly official. I brought it up as a point of illustration because they had applied and sure. I mean, the other thing, just thinking through, and I'm sure you'll think of more things if they actually apply, what about reasonable alternatives? Does it South Central also have an easement up onto Thompson's Ledge? Could you not put a 20-foot tower up there? And now you're 350 feet in the air without a 195-foot tower? And can the coverage be as good, almost, whatever? I mean, so...
Yeah.
There was some discussion before about putting antennas up there. I don't know where that might be.
There's some right now, aren't there?
There's... I'm not sure what they're... It's for TV. It's like the TV repeater.
There's some repeater, yeah.
I think that's all it is now.
Okay.
It's the TV. But they were talking about putting cell phone. Cell phone antenna up there.
And if South Central has an easement up there, it's right here, then...
Yeah, that's definitely a lower impact as far as... they could make it 20 feet tall.
So would you just read over what the agenda, what the upcoming business is?
So, two public hearings on conditional use for residential short-term rental. Curtis wants, you want that in your zoning administrator report, the discussion of ag zone research?
Well, you want to do it, or during your table of uses discussion, we could just incorporate it into there. I'll just come prepared with,
And table of use continuation.
A little better.
And you had started on a discussion about economic opportunity. I'll go back and find out when that was.
Okay.
June or May?
Yeah.
It's one of the things that the town council had asked.
Right. And I just, like I said, when we went back and did that resolution, I saw that it was in there and it kind of got dropped off.
Well, in a sense, we're also addressing our table of uses.
Right.
That's true.
Squarely into your discussion.
I think that was why they are and when they did. Okay.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, and you guys notice that we start at 6 o'clock next month.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you for saying that.
Wow, thank you, Curtis, for all your work.
We won't waste your time.
Yes, and same with you, Josie. That's a good point, but you made a good point.
I do miss my day, thanks.
Yeah.